Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, please do rate, review and subscribe. It really does help more people find us and enables me to keep making them. So if you do get something out of these cheery chats about death and want to say thank you, that is a great way of doing it. Also, we have been nominated for 2 British Podcast Awards, which means we are also eligible for the Listener's Choice. So if you would like to vote for Griefcast, simply head to the British Podcast Awards website and click the Listener's Choice Vote button, and then vote for us, please. Or vote for any of your favourite podcasts, really. Just, get involved. This week, I'm talking to writer and actor Frogstone. Frog has appeared in an array of TV comedies, including Peep Show, Fresh Meat, Extras, as well as writing and starring in her own comedy drama for BBC Four, Bucket, with Miriam Margolyes. Frog came in to talk to me about her dad, who died in 2014. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with writer and actor Frog Stone. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great.
You got two cups of tea.
I know, which will hopefully give a sort of sense of urgency as they pass through me towards the end.
Oh, I see. Yeah, as we get near the end. Mm. I'm mainly using mine to warm up. I'm so cold.
I've got quite a big bladder, though, apparently.
Have you? Mm. How do you know that?
I do know that, though.
Yeah, because you said it confidently, like, yeah. I've got a big bladder.
Well, I also have, just from various medical things. Oh. I also have a very slow heart rate. This is true. Oh. And people always go, in a hospital situation, yeah. Doctors, they go, oh, do you do a lot of exercise? I'm like, oh. No. And they said, you must run marathons or something, because this wow. heart is so strong and so slow. And I'm like, hmm. And I had a last, what do you call them when they knock you out? Anaesthetic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had a general anaesthetic. Oh, yeah. And then when I came round, you know, they're sort of checking everything's okay. Yeah. And you know, it's so weird when you come round from that, you're sort of going, oh, I'm awake.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have no memory of the time in between, unlike yeah. sleep. It's very strange. And then they sort of put on the beep, beep, beep to check.
Thing, yeah.
And practically crash team comes running in. And I'm like, no, that just is how slow it is. It's beep. They have wow. to get me to drink water and all sorts and move around to get it going.
So who are we remembering today?
I guess we're remembering my dad.
Your dad, okay.
Yeah.
So when did your dad die?
So it's nearly 4 years ago.
Okay.
Not quite. And the short version, because obviously we're going to go into this, but yeah. to welcome people in. So my father, he had cancer, and it was basically 3 months from start to finish of that official diagnosis. Yeah.
What cancer did he
well,
have?
Well, it was lung cancer. Okay. And there's the thing. So my grandfather had lung cancer. I didn't really know him. Mm. I mean, he's a sort of interesting figure. Like his real name was Joshua Solomon Emmanuel Finkelstein. But he went by the name Sid Stone. And I didn't really, you know, he died when I was really young. But I remember that because it was the first death, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I wasn't sad because I didn't know him, and I was probably about 5 or 6 when he died, right. And I remembered I didn't go to funeral anything like this. But I knew that he'd had lung cancer. This was the thing. And then when my dad got ill, and the sort of circumstances of my relation to that are quite complicated, we hadn't really spoken for about 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And he'd sort of got ill, and sort of a phone call went round. And I was like, I'm going to have to go and see for myself what this is.
Yeah.
And everybody was quite, well, everybody, so my mother and my brother were a little bit more, well, who knows? I mean, the doctors think this or the doctors think that, whatever. Anyway, they'd sort of said that it might be a liver or pancreatic or something. Because he said, and I went up and I saw him and I was like, that, you know, when you look at somebody and you go, the shadow of death is upon you.
Yeah.
It was so clear to me. And I don't think it was to anybody else. Or they thought maybe it was going to be cancer that was treatable. You know, that
do you
maybe
think that's because you hadn't seen him for a while as well, so you were able to sort of be like, "Oh, you look very ill compared to the last time I saw you."
I think so, but I also think that I have a different relationship to facts and truth,
right?
than anyone in my family, maybe.
Yeah,
and that was something that always separated me from them, but. I sort of said, well, I need all the facts. I sort of can't bear it when people give you half a finished conversation. Yeah, and I say to my partner at home as well, I was like, no, tell me exactly what was said and then I can interpret it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rather than what you think. I need to know what was said. And so the doctors had said, it's probably liver or something. But that was secondary, I think, in the end.
Right.
And he'd been talking about having a bad back. And I was like, well, it'll be lung cancer then, won't it? Because that will make complete sense. Because he looked very like my grandfather in my memory. And I look very like my dad. And there was that thing of going, of course, it'll be that weird genetic thing it'll be for me next. You know, in that, again, that's the
those
Jewish side of it. Just like, God, it's like this thing.
Yeah.
Because he had smoked back in the day, but he hadn't smoked for a good 30 years.
Right,
I think he stopped smoking around when I was born, maybe. So 30, I'm being kind. More like, 35 years, I guess. Yeah. And because he'd had pneumonia. This is a big sort of story because he'd been a massive smoker and had been thin and then just stopped like that and got really fat and drank instead. but yeah, so he had lung cancer but by the point it was all discovered, it was all over.
Right.
But then it turned out he'd been to the doctor in the summer. This was near Christmas. He'd been to the doctor in the summer and he never used to go to the doctor. And they had some locum had sort of sent them away and said, do some exercise or you're old kind of thing.
Right.
And there's, I think there, both of my parents and my brother as well, sort of thought that if you get cancer, you'll end up doing treatment and maybe you'll have a few years.
Yeah.
Because sort of everybody else I know whose parents got cancer, I mean, obviously I know your circumstances are different listening to the podcast, then they sort of had treatment and then they got a bit better, then they got worse.
That's more common, is that it's normally like, oh yeah, they're having chemo and we're seeing what happens. But yeah, unfortunately there are a few of us in the club of, oh no.
And it is a club, as you talk about. You don't know until it happens to you.
Yeah.
And then I have, you know, you look to other people and you go, well, he won't know.
Mm.
And then they join the club and you're like,
welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome. I'm sorry, but also welcome.
Yes, because so, now you know the thing that couldn't be known.
Yeah, that's it. It cannot be explained beforehand, unfortunately. A bit like, as we talk about as well, like having a child, as you're about to have.
Yeah,
very
double.
Soon, double.
Don't do things by halves or singles. We've got twins on the way.
Yeah, and it's hard to explain that. It's just, yeah, it's hard to explain until... So, lung cancer, and it's spread everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go back to see him. And so you said you hadn't spoken to him for 4 years.
Mm.
Did this illness suddenly make you go, right, OK, we need to sort this out?
Yes, and then we didn't.
Oh, OK.
So what happened was, well, basically, I mean, it felt like his death was very, very quick, but it also felt like it sort of accelerated and then plateaued slightly.
Right.
And that was incredibly difficult. And so what happened, I hadn't really spoken, not very close to them, and they weren't so kind. And my dad was really not very kind. And just a sort of complicated person. I think have you seen I, Tonya?
Yes, I have.
Right.
So brilliant film.
It is a totally brilliant film. Yeah. And Tonya's mother and her critical voice. That, like, my dad was, you know, the opposite of a cheerleader. Whatever you do was not good enough.
Yeah, there's an amazing scene in the film where someone is really shouting at Tonya, like, you're shit, you're never going to do this, this is you're awful, as she's about to do something. And then you realise the mum has actually paid someone.
Yeah.
She's like, she needs someone to hate her so she'll work harder. You
know that. Except that wasn't my dad's motivation, I don't think. Okay. He was bipolar and lots of complicated things. And I think he was ultimately a very frustrated, angry man, but he very much, you know, the thing that your worst fear about something, or like, oh, I wasn't, oh, I just wasn't that good, he would say it.
Right.
And he wouldn't say it in order that I would try harder. Mm. And without being too much of a boast, there's plenty of things I've done very well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
and like, you know, and exam results and all those kind of things. And he'd be like, and it would make me go, I'd up better than you.
Yeah.
Why are you so critical? So there was that. And then there was a bit of a fallout around my wedding. And I just thought, I can't really do that. I just can't.
Mm.
And the best way to resolve this, / the family way, is to not talk about it.
Right.
Whereas my parents would always sort of, and my family would carry on as if nothing was wrong.
Right.
Whereas I found that just too stifling and frustrating. So I would prefer to leave the room, as it were. So I kind of did. Now, I wasn't not in touch at all. I sort of maintained being in touch, but I hadn't spoken to my brother at all because he was sort of the villain of the piece in some ways at one particular moment. But, you know, that's just families, isn't it? You have these fallouts. And so I didn't really speak to them and I didn't see them and I hadn't been to my home town or my home since... God, I think one sort of dreadful, nightmarish, abortive Christmas visit, let's say in 2007, maybe. And so this was, 2014. So it's been quite a long time.
Yeah. So things were not great.
No, they weren't great at all. But I never spoke to her. It's not like I had any sort of, hey, we'll talk about things relationship with any of them. And I always felt like the odd one out. And I was the younger one by 6 years. And I always think I was sort of felt I was born into this family after it already had its honeymoon period and it all sort of gone a bit wrong and then there I was. But I was very like my dad. I have a very short temper and he was quite clever. I mean, he was a smart guy, actually. So often he would be incredibly frustrated with idiots.
Mm.
And that I was like,
me too. I get you.
I got that. So it wasn't, we weren't sort of completely different in that way, but we hadn't really spoken. And it's towards the end of 2013. So there was a message, and I think my brother got in touch, and he had sort of defriended me on Facebook, etc., etc. And then he sort of reached out and sent this sort of message, and I was like, right, well, because when bad things happen, they're so real that you have to engage in them. So I was like, okay, well, what do you mean? And I so wanted it not to be true. You know, that thing of going, please let this not be true, because now we're going to have to resolve everything.
Yeah, now we're on a timer.
Yeah, there's this complete time limit to sort everything out. But I just was so angry, though. I felt even more resentful. I think a lot of people, including myself, might have thought that if you have a difficult relationship, but you're pretty much, you're not close, that the experience of death and grief would be easier, because like I thought with my grandfather, well, I remember him dying, I didn't really know him, so you know, but it for me it just wasn't. It was just like a proper traumatic experience.
Yeah, I don't think the lack of closeness does allow, I can see, like, you think logically, oh well, I'm not close to them, therefore I'll be less sad. But it just doesn't work, because you're sort of angry that you're not close to them, I think.
Well, I think it's sort of, I mean, because it couldn't talk about things, because it wasn't possible. And then what happened was, so I pitch up and I sort of turn up at the house and I'm like, oh. And I always do feel when I turn up at that particular house that, you know, I'm like Damien pulling up outside a church in The Omen. It's like, ah. And I sort of went in. I was on best behaviour because I just wanted to see, and I didn't want to start any sort of row, and I didn't that time. And I went in and I just went, oh God, yeah, the shadow of death is upon you. And he'd lost quite a lot of weight and looked grey. I was like, well, you know, we'll see. And I was like, no. And because of that, and then my mother was in a bit of a bad mood about the whole thing, that she was having to do all sorts of stuff with him. And then he couldn't really go upstairs. And they have one of those tall sort of 70s, 80s houses, you know, with a garage in the bottom. And so he wasn't able to go upstairs to sleep. So he was on the sofa, which was a mistake, because the carpets in this house were so threadbare and weird that it was begging for an accident, which then did happen. So he fell over a couple of times. And there was some sort of agreement with my mother that she wasn't to move him and wasn't to make him do any of this sort of stuff. And I was like, this is a stupid agreement.
Yes.
And actually, there was room in this house that they could have made a bedroom downstairs and made it all possible.
Yeah, just adapted to what was happening.
Yeah. But again, this is me. This was the thing where I turn up and going, right, well, here's how you problem solve this. This is what you do. This is what they do. And like, oh, you always think you know better. And I'm like, because I do. Because I actually do in this situation.
Let me help you.
Like, we could do this, we could do that to sort it all out. But it wasn't done. And he then fell over again. And my mum had to call an ambulance because he'd broken his pelvis, I think, basically. Because, of course, it spread to his bones already by this point. So then he was taken into hospital. So I think I'd gone up. I went up every weekend, actually. Well, I couldn't always stay in the house for complicated reasons. So that was... And it's a long way to Preston. The train is actually only 2.5 hours. But it's really expensive. And sometimes I would drive, which is about, you know, 5 hours, but it was better to get that. And I always went up on my own, because it's like I need that sort of time.
Yeah, to like prepare yourself.
And I turned up and he was in hospital. And I think I had been told I had to clear out my childhood bedroom, because obviously me saying you need to sort this house out had suddenly meant that my room, which was perfectly orderly and not the room anybody would be going into, was the one. So I did do that. And I chucked away everything. I was like, oh, God, I just found everything. I was like, throw it all in the bin, because I just wanted everything to be gone, I think. Which was obviously me going, right, I'm going to take charge of this. If somebody's going to die, then I'm throwing everything away and I'm in charge of this new stuff. But then went to visit him in hospital. And he'd been apparently incredibly upset and sort of cried when he was sort of taken out of the house, because he knew he was never going to come back. Which, you know, I suppose is very strange, because... So my dad would always do things where he would start something and never finish it.
Right.
Which is a quality I absolutely don't have. I have to see everything through to the end.
Yeah.
But I think he's moved into that house in 1982. And I don't remember living anywhere else. But I was a baby. Not a baby, but a toddler. And... he'd started building a patio. I mean, that never got finished. Never, ever finished. And he would take up random hobbies, like bikes, sailing a boat. I mean, he's on a teacher's salary. I mean, like, come on. So boats and yachts and then horses. He owned a few race horses by the end of the... And did a lot of betting and sort of got himself into some financial troubles. And so I think he just couldn't believe... that there really was this time limit.
Yeah.
But it was very much happening. So he went into hospital And that was all a bit awkward. And everybody then is just so... The stress makes everybody kick off. And I was angry. And I was like, I hate hospitals. Obviously, who likes them? This is too stressful. I sort of can't stand it. And I'm also so annoyed that this has happened, because if you'd done what I said you should have done, and nobody wants to hear that, that's a massive row erupts. And it's also because, I think this is me, I think it's probably my whole family, when you're upset, it just comes out in the first instance as rage. Because you're expressing frustrations.
And it's difficult if you've got a lot of people like that, I guess, because I'm the same. I have a short temper. My dad had a really short temper, but my mum and brother don't. So I think it's quite, you need a couple to kind of like soothe it. So it's quite good that, even though I do miss having like a fiery sparring partner, but it does mean when I have a stressful rage reaction, I'm met with almost water of two people being like, well, I don't see why you're that upset. It's okay. Think about this. And you don't meet more fire, which is like, so
is that good though?
I do. Yeah, I do think it's good. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's hugely frustrating.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what you want is more people to be like, you're right, this is awful, let's kick off.
Yes.
But I think it also gives you that, because the thing with the hot temper is you do, sometimes it's very useful to have 5 seconds thinking time. And that's of what they give you, because they're like, do you really? Why are you that angry? And you think, oh, why am I that angry?
Yeah.
And sometimes you think, because I fucking need to be. Or you go, yes, no, you're right, I have no idea.
Well, like Cicely, my partner, always just says, please, in every situation, just count to 10 beforehand, because she's much more sort of sanguine. And she gets angry and all sorts of things, but just generally is a bit more rational. And the problem is I am, and this is, again, something I get from my dad. I'm very quick. So I get things quickly and I get angry quickly and I get things wrong quickly.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's like my brain's, it's so fast, which is sometimes brilliant and sometimes the most shitty thing that can happen.
Because I've done the whole loop. I've gone through every possible. So when people go, but what if? And I'm like, no, I thought about that 10 minutes ago and dismissed it. Of course that's a stupid idea. Don't tell me we could do this downstairs.
I've already worked out 3 years in advance why that's a bad idea.
Yes.
I'm having an argument with you 3 years in advance.
Yeah. And, you know, I did the dimensions of this room and I can tell you that won't work. Etc. So one of those things, but in different ways. My brother and I are so different. So different. His temper is not quite the same as mine. He doesn't, and I can't speak for how he processes things. I don't know, but he's not quite the same. But he and my mum were quite tight. And I just wasn't. And I was easy. One thing was I was very much, and I was kind of happy to be cast as that, as the black sheep scapegoat. So normally everything was my fault. And I'm like, fine. So I'll just go then, because you're not my people. I'll go and find my people. But I think my brother was so shocked by the whole thing. He was then being in touch and I was like, I can't, you know, and I was like, Mum is mad. And she is maddening, because she wasn't really dealing with it. And also she did have a sort of like, oh, this is all awful for me sort of thing. And it's a bit like, you are equally responsible for this whole situation in some ways. Of course she wasn't. But then, so then from the hospital, they put him in hospice.
Right.
And the thing was, it was a bit like, you could still sort out the house. Surely that would be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It just seemed to me that that would be the right thing to do, but it wasn't done. And he was put in this hospice. And he was very angry about being in the hospice. Hospices are wretched places.
Some are beautiful, but it really, it can be luck of the draw.
The place was.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, it's where you go. It depends where you go, I guess, because it really is where people go to die.
Yeah.
And if you're not quite at the bit, you know, people often go there the last week of their life. And if you're a bit ahead of that.
Yes.
Yeah, it must be fucking awful.
That was the thing. So he was actually in there for a month, maybe. So I think he'd got to the point where he was, like, so ill he couldn't go anywhere else, but not dead yet.
Yeah.
So maybe he shouldn't be there, which was a bit complicated. And at one point they were talking about, well, maybe he will just live for a little bit longer and they'll put him in some sort of care home. And I was like, could sort out the house. But that was never going to be done. And my mum doesn't drive.
Oh, wow.
And they had very fixed roles.
Yeah, yeah.
And so obviously my dad did drive. So she was having to get the bus there and then I'd turn up and I'd take her. My brother would go all the time to visit him. But we didn't, I mean, you know, so the first time I went to the hospice, I was so stressed out. I felt my sort of blood boiling because I was like, oh, there's so many things I'm so angry about and I must now behave because I'm in a place where people are dying.
Yeah.
And then I was walking through the hospice and there was a person, I guess my age there. I passed by a room and I sort of found that unbearably upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you sort of go, old people who've, you know, had some innings.
You sort of want it to be a room full of old people, but yeah, of course it isn't. That's not.
Yeah. And then I got to the room and I can't remember what my mother had been irritating me about. I think she'd been off at church, actually, and I think I just decided to get irritated about that because I always would want my mother to justify any opinion she ever had. And she never could or never thought she had to.
Yeah.
And so we'd had some squabble about something. And then my dad would, he'd be depressed. And I was always very angry at him for being depressed because I suffer from it too. But he always, when I remember sort of saying, and he just laughed at me because his depression was far more important and his rage and kicking off, which is how he sort of manifested it a lot of the time. That was fine.
Right? Yeah.
And I was so angry about that, that I knew that I sort of wanted to, I suppose I sort of wanted to say that was really bad. You were a really bad parent for quite a lot of the time. You were terrifying. You did really bad things. And now you have to be sorry for it because then it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He was so angry and he just sort of kicked off and he was like, fuck off from the hospice and stuff.
And just it's hard because the thing is, again, like you said, people don't just change because they're dying. And the same, like, you don't change because your dad is dying. Like, this, like, wanting to be calm and zen. It's like, but if you're not calm and zen about anything in life, like, why, you know, like, I remember, you know, when my dad was in the hospital, I went out for a fag because I was smoking at the time. And it's like, and people are like, oh, how could you do it? Like, well, one, it was extremely stressful. And two, I smoked. So what did I do? I went and smoked again. Like, your life... It's very easy to think if you haven't been through it, a magic switch occurs and everyone's like, now we know what matters. No, you're still you.
Yeah.
Just you in a stressful situation.
Yeah.
So if your dad had been dealt with things in an angry way, of course, once he's got cancer, he's dealing with it in an angry way.
Which, of course, brought out all my anger and it brought out all my teenage anger. I didn't behave like a grown-up, you know, 35-year-old.
But how can you when you're with your family?
No, I couldn't.
Like, I don't. No one behaves like
that. Nobody was sort of sharing any sort of compassion, but not that. I mean, it was never like that for me anyway.
Yeah.
And also he would sort of, he still managed right up until when he was sort of compos mentis to say like, and will you ever do any proper theatre? I just went, no.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's like, not... from the hospice bed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sad. But I was like,
do you want to call my agent? Let's have a chat.
Yeah, please. But I was like, well, no. And also, you need someone to go, there's another way, you haven't understood anything I've done. I've done my own stuff. I've written things. I've been in loads of stuff. I've been in films. Why can... Nothing is ever good enough.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter if you were, like, lead at the RSC, would it? There'd be something else that would be...
Well, he would have been very pleased if I'd been lead at the RSC, which I'm never going to be or don't want to be. Yeah, it's not something I've pursued. I wouldn't be very good at it. But he would be pleased with that. Particularly because then he could come along and say something critical afterwards.
Right,
like,
just to let me know
that he noticed that I wasn't that good on that scene.
The iambic on that was a little... Yeah.
Somebody else would have been better in the show.
Yeah.
That's his classic thing. You go, yes, no, she was very good. You're like, hmm. So it was difficult. Even from his literal deathbed, he wanted to let me know that I... wasn't as good as I thought I was. And it was always a bit like, yes, but I don't think I'm that good. But then I sort of understood. And so what... I understood that that's how he felt.
Mm.
But I was still so angry about the whole thing that I mean, I went up because I knew I just had to.
Yeah,
and sort of had to be there. And then by the end, he couldn't really speak. And I would just turn up and I sort of stayed in a Premier Inn around the corner from the hospice and sort of turned up and went... You know, we'll just sit in silence. But that was kind of better.
Yeah.
I sort of liked that ritual of it all being calm. Because then you can sort of go, well, this is just happening now.
Yeah, I am just being here.
And all the things that, you know, can be said. But I would go drive home and I would be, exhausted.
Mm.
And upset, obviously. But furious, because that's the way it came out. But it was grief. And I would sort of... just keep thinking, God, I hope this isn't happening. Can this not be true? Can it all...
Yeah.
All right, we're in the hospice now, so let's just stop there and let this be the thing.
Yeah.
And I would cry a lot in the shower every morning to sort of get it out. And I'd have to explain to this, I'd have to say, oh, but it's not for what I'm losing, it's for what I never had.
Yeah.
And now I'm not going to get.
And I think we talk about a lot on the show as well that it's hard if you... like, if you're not an angry person, I think it can be hard to understand. Like, I am... There's somewhere in my makeup that, my temper is a thing. Like,
right.
my go-to reaction is often anger.
Yeah.
And I've worked very hard to that not be the case, but it's always me working hard for that. You know what I mean? Like, it's always me being like, don't call that person a moron. Try and understand them. But in my head, the first reaction is, they're fucking moron.
Like, but they often are.
They often are, Frog. They often are. But we have to learn to accept they are morons and they need our sympathy. But I think it's easy if you're crying for people to help you. Mm. It's easy for them to be like, oh, that's sad. But when you are full of rage, rage drives people away. It doesn't say help me. It makes them go, oh, okay, I'll leave her alone, which often is what you're using it for. It's often why it's there, to be like, yeah, stay back. I don't need your help. I'm fine. But it's a very hard emotion to have around something which traditionally or not traditionally, like, I guess the expectations are you should just be sad and this should be like sort of beatific. And
yeah.
Like, yeah. So, but of course you're angry. If you had a not great relationship with him and then he's going.
Yeah.
It's fucking irritating. That's what I used to say. It's like, it's fucking annoying that my dad died.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Irritated.
Yeah, you lost out.
Yeah, why do you do that?
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely annoying.
It was just so, but I think that anger as well was about all of those sort of dealing with the upset and disappointment and sort of fury that comes out, and it is the case. And then I think around that time, though, I did, as you just said, go, well, we must remember, however moronic somebody might be in my path, we don't know what they're going through. And I also think, yeah, I would be really sort of, oh, it was a funny moods, but it's because I was going through something.
Yeah.
I, you know, people don't recognise that, and I do try to remember it now. That is the one thing. And subsequent to his death, though, you know, we'll get to that, I have understood him so much more, because I now go, God, he must have felt like this when he was my age. I think the feelings I have and the way I'm reacting, so that's why he reacted that way. Not that it's good.
Yeah.
And it's not a sort of forgiveness as such, but an understanding. Yeah, I'm like, I get you now.
I feel like that because I feel like I react quite similarly to him. And even though my brother is quite similar to him, he doesn't react like him. So often my brother will say things like, God, why did you do that? And I think, I know why he did that. Because that's what I would do. It's not correct. It's not helpful. It's stupid. But I do understand the makeup that goes, that'll be a good idea. Like, so yeah, I think if you can, it is helpful sometimes if you do have a similar personality, which can often cause problems when they're alive. Because I definitely had that. We didn't get on very well because we reacted very similarly to things. But his death made me go, yeah, I can see why he thought that.
Yeah.
That comment was a funny comment when actually it upset everybody. Like, I could see something in his brain, or why he didn't let that go and he thought that would be a good, you know.
Yeah, totally.
It does make you a little bit more sympathetic. So you're visiting him and he's starting to not be, you know, really present anymore. So what, like, were you there when he died?
There was a bit of... my brother and I would text, which is the first time we ever really had sort of spoken, you know, actually communicated one-to-one that wasn't in a sort of fight as children, that it was sort of on the decline. So I sort of went up and then 1 week he just wasn't awake at all. And then the hospice was also very, I think they had sent him for some, prior to that, some palliative radiotherapy.
Right, yeah.
Which was sort of meaningless. And he'd had to sign a DNR in the ambulance, which also made it, you know, really present. And then he sort of just began to shut down from that. And I did find, to me as well, I was like, yeah, it's a hospice, so this is the end. I remember one thing, people had sent cards, which I was thinking, why do people send cards to hospices? Unless there's going to be some real heartfelt message, I don't know, because I wonder what it made him think, because he wasn't a sort of send cards, read letters guy. He never did any of that. He never sent them. You know, he wasn't interested. Birthday, like, forget it, he wouldn't remember. You know, that sort of person. And you could never make him happy either. So if you got him something for his birthday, it would be wrong. But if you didn't get him anything, then... So I was like, well, don't send cards to him. There was one from one of my mum's German friends, who's a doctor. It was, like, hilariously awful. It just sort of said, oh, dear Mike, so sorry that your last trip to Baden-Baden was the last one you will ever make in this world. But, you know, just ask for some more morphine and things will be over soon. I was like, oh, my God.
Wow. Who'd go through some extreme sympathy? A German doctor.
I know. And I was just a bit, like, reading it going, oh, yeah, Doris, I remember her. And then I was like...
Wow, thanks, Doris.
But like, really hammering it home. Don't be, this is the last ones you ever will have made.
But also some helpful medical advice. Do take the morphine.
Yeah, just have some more, yeah. Which he did have and did seem to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean,
easier. And I must say, the hospice staff were amazing.
Yeah.
And I think it was just so much easier. I mean, they'd say, oh, you know, they'd wash him and stuff, and they'd go, well, we'll go and give him some care, which obviously made me sort of weep because I was like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But I want him to have it.
Of course.
Like, I didn't want to punish him, but I sort of just was waiting for him to suddenly go, oh, I'm sorry.
Mm.
And he did, to Cicely, my wife, he did sort of say in the hospital weeks earlier, I'd have gone off with my mother to sort something out or put money in the car meter or whatever it was. And he sort of said, yeah, I suppose that was a bit shit at the wedding. And I was like, now say it to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it moves forward. So the weekend, I remember talking to one of the nurses and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, what's going on?
And she was like, well, I think it's sort of imminent. So, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't think I need to be here, but I need to know when it's going to happen. It's a long way. I don't live around here. And I knew that because my brother was only 40 minutes drive away in Manchester. It's not, you know, on the motorway, it's nothing really. And with lots of time off from work, because, you know, if you're self-employed, nobody cares.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway, it was going to be the last. So I went up and I was like, I think it's going to be this weekend. I sort of knew when I was driving up, totally knew. And then we're there, and he's not really awake, but he's not, nothing's really changing either. Yeah. But then they moved him from a two-person room to a single room, right. And that's like,
yeah, that's heads da, up.
Da, 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 yeah. Yeah. And the thing that I found very traumatic, along with all the unresolved emotional stuff, was that as the sort of time crept in, he began to look more and more sort of terrified. He was unconscious, basically, sort of dreaming.
Yeah.
But he would sort of look like he was in pain. I'd go, is he in pain? Like, what's going on? And we were sort of sitting there, not really talking. And, you know, it's a lot of stuff that it's in my show that my mum would bring his sort of packed lunch that would just drive me insane. She'd sit there eating. I was like, oh, my God, when are you going to finish eating these crisps? Because all you can hear is this wretched death rattle.
Oh, God.
And then my mum really slowly working her way through a pack of Quavers. And it's like,
that's a lot to deal with.
I know, and I was texting furiously because you know what I'm doing? I was texting Cicely endlessly, and then I sent the text to my mum's phone.
No!
Because I was like, my mother is, you know, she's doing my head in, she's taking ages to eat these Quavers. Like a massive long rant, because I was getting it out, right? And I much prefer to
type
than talk, actually. And then I was like, when I saw her, I'd sent it, and I was like, I need your phone, mum. Digging out of her bag, and I was like, and I said, I've sent something that wasn't meant for you, and I don't want you to read it because it's private. She's like, well, I wouldn't have read it. And I'm like, so would have done.
Of course you would have done.
Anyway, so I managed to get the phone off her.
Oh my God, thank God.
And just be like, delete, thank God for that.
Oh,
but then I did
God.
Help myself to a choice text that she'd sent to my brother about me. And I was like, it didn't
After
say anything.
You were like, you would have read it, and I'm going to read yours.
Yeah,
well.
I did, and I read it, and I was like, they just want to blame me for everything, so okay. Yeah. It makes me angry, but okay, blame me for everything. But I was like, you evil bitch. How dare you? How dare you? We're all sitting here texting everybody about everybody else. Anyway, after that, I then went out for some fresh air because I was like, you know, and God, it was hard going home. Because also my parents' house, you know, I said the patio was never finished. There was a lot of unfinished stuff. There was a really old carpet. And then, you know, the bath had sort of come through the ceiling at one point, and that had not been replastered,
right,
and then there's bare plaster, and it's like this half finished. It was like modern day Grey Gardens. It's the best way I could.
Oh my God.
And it was filled with all of these books, and I was like, maybe we can get rid of some of these books. And she's like, I will read them again.
Okay.
Like, okay. And she then started taking them to the hospice to prove me that she could read, you know, five books a day.
Oh
my
God.
And I was like, okay. And then I went out after that text, I went out for some fresh air. And the grounds are really pretty there, you know, it's beautiful. And Preston is quite an industrial northern town. It's grim. But then around it, you've got lots of lovely, pretty countryside, which was where this was. And it was spring. So it was April. I think it was after Easter. I can't remember when Easter was that year. It was all a bit... But, you know, the flowers were out and there were some rabbits around. And I was like, that nice. Then I have a black cat who is, until the twins arrive, is obviously the love of my life.
Yes.
And then poor little girl will be relegated. But I love her. And she's a very, very sweet cat. When I was sitting outside, just calming down and just feeling crap,
a black cat appeared.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, goodness. And it was a sweet cat, and it came up to me, and I was like, I think I better go back in.
Wow.
And, yep, that was the beginning of the end. A nurse came in the room, and she was like, I think it might be soon. And she said, shall I leave you? And we all went, no! Because we don't know. So yeah. She sort of stayed in the room.
Wow.
And she was nice enough, but obviously she's a bit like, yeah, I mean, I see this literally every day. This is my day job. And his sort of breathing would sort of stop and start. And then he looked like his face contorted into such terror.
Aww.
You know in Harry Potter, when the Dementors come and suck the soul?
Yeah.
I swear to God, that's what it was like. God. And I was so like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
Is this something really bad is actually happening? I don't really believe in any sort of life after death, but I found it very sort of stressful that he was fighting it, obviously.
Yeah.
But I know it's a body process and his mind is not engaged in it. But it was horrendous because we were all just there going, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then the nurse went, I think he's gone. And we went, when? But he had.
Oh, my God.
So then we were like, okay, go out of the room for a minute. We sort of go, blah, 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 this is all awful. And then she goes, well, you know, what do you want to do? I think we were in the room for a bit. I don't remember. I remember my mother and my brother were sort of hovering over him. My brother was so upset and crying. My mother was sort of doing whatever she does. It's a sort of strange, she doesn't always look like she's crying and things. It was an odd thing. And I was just sort of arms folded, sort of at the end of the bed, just sort of going, I'm not involved in this. This isn't me.
Mm.
This isn't my family. And it's all so stressful. And that was the worst thing I've ever seen happen.
Mm.
And then they said, oh, do you want to step out and we'll sort of get him ready? And I was like, yep, let's get some fresh air. And then one of the other nurses was like, oh, I'm sorry, has Mike gone? And then my mother went, yes. And I'm sorry he was so horrible to you all, because he was. I mean, he would sort of effing blinded them. But she sort of felt the need to sort of go, see, it was him, not me. And I was like, oh, really, Mum? And then the nurse went, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't have had him any other way, would you? And all three of us just went, do you know if you're going to put it like that at this moment, now?
What could we? Is that an option? Because we didn't know that was an option.
We're a bit like, you know, and I think he wasn't very nice to my mother either, which explains a lot of her sort of madness. And I was like, yeah, I just wish the nice version of him, which did exist, plenty, I wish he'd been like that all the time.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. And likewise, his death was so sort of, it felt like that could have been more peaceful. And so then we go back into the room and, you know, they sort of
do
put pyjamas on or something and lay them out, that ritual, and put some flowers. But they sort of moved his head back and had his mouth open and he already looked sort of shriveled and dead. It was very weird. Like, you just go, whoa, we've just been out of the room for, I don't know, was it 5 minutes or was it 2 days or something? It's really weird.
It's really weird if you haven't seen one to see a dead body. Like, because you, again, that thing of like, you see them on films, so you think, oh, it looks like that. It's like, no, because that's obviously someone with their eyes closed. Like, to see someone actually not be there anymore.
But he had this sort of rictus of terror on them. And I was like, why have you done this? And then we had to leave. And then they give us like some plastic bags of his stuff and his, you know, new dressing gown and slippers that I bought him to be there. And he sort of go home and had to drive home and just sit there. And then my brother's like, oh, how am I going to tell my children? And I was like, they won't know. They were quite little at the time. And again, I sort of wondered, lots of people who are our age have children already.
Mm.
And then that, I assume that might have made it feel better because you've got this other focus, you've got this other family. I sort of totally felt like the end of the line that day.
Yeah.
And again, completely isolated. And then I think, you know, I was like, well, I'm just going to drink this bottle of wine. And and then I couldn't sleep. I went back with my mother and then I couldn't sleep in my childhood bedroom because I generally couldn't. I had a crappy time when I was there. I don't want to be there tonight. My mother really does snore. And so I'd had to sort of come downstairs and sleep on the sofa and just go, God. And you wake up going, oh, no, it did happen.
Yeah.
Oh, I really hope that was a dream. I would like to go back and do it differently. And the thing was, I was writing this thing at the time, a different thing for me and Miriam Margolyes, and then it morphed into what became Bucket.
Because right, I see. So it was different.
It was a different thing, yeah. I mean, in many ways, thematically, it was about two women who don't get on.
Mm.
But it turned, and I was like, well, that's the story I'm going to need to talk about. I want to talk about difficult relationships and the attempt to resolve them. And obviously I made the mother character in my show, not a father character. I didn't want it to be about mothers and daughters. And in many ways, during that experience, I didn't have a conversation with my dad. I was having to have it with my mother and taking lots of my anger with him out on her, but yeah. I was angry with her too. And so I sort of morphed it into that. But in that story, she wants to make things better.
Yeah.
Which obviously my dad didn't. Yes, it was about a mother and daughter doing a bucket list because she's dying. So right. I was writing something different and then I ended up doing that.
And you made that character, like you say, want to make things better.
Yeah, people say, oh, is that what your real mother was like? I was like, not in any way. And by the way, I'm not like that Fran character either. Yeah. I'm not a sort of 40-year-old history teacher virgin. Quite. But it was the only way I could sort of deal with it was like, right, I'm going to write this thing now. And all of those emotions I then had again, talking about traumas, of cathartics, get it out. Writing it was tricky.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because just like the death, it was this sort of longish, drawn out period of bad relations. Not with the script, but, you know, you're writing thing. And then when they actually commissioned it, it was an incredibly short period. I actually only had 3 and a bit months to get it done.
Wow. Yes, fast.
And then we're shooting in winter. Like, ridiculously fast. Yeah. And, you know, they were going to always make it. So they should have just said yes in July
when
they had already decided to say yes instead of waiting until the meeting that they had to have in mid-September. Yeah, you know, yeah. I would have liked those 2 months, guys. It felt very similar. And it was the very similar
of course,
sort of,
same thing. Suddenly your life is changing.
Yeah. There's this whole thing to do. And I was trying to sort of exercise and talk about it. It was different, but the emotions are the same. You're trying to explain. You don't get on. And then I'm trying to, the character that I was playing is trying to go along with these things, but is furious. And then the mother is trying ultimately to make things better, but she doesn't really know how. So they're much more sympathetic than me, my dad, I hope. But I mean, the series was on last year, but it's been and gone. But I have to say that the writing process was a bit stressful because it brought up, I realise now, these unresolved feelings. Mm. And filming it was super stressful.
Yeah.
There's all the stresses of doing it that have nothing to do with death. But then I think a lot of people were not in the club.
Right.
And so didn't quite understand that maybe that's why I was stressed.
Yeah.
And why that's why it really mattered when things didn't go right and we didn't get that scene.
Yeah, I was like, it's really hard for people. Like, and I was wondering this the other day, like, you can't request everyone's in the club.
No.
But sometimes I really fucking wish you could. Like, whenever I've done creative stuff about grief as well, and or I've had meetings and stuff, and I straight away I'm like, so what's your experience of grief? And they're like, oh, well, I've still got my parents. And I think, well, you're not going to get quite where this is coming from. And that sounds really harsh, but it's just, I've had to play scenes where someone's been my dad and I found that hard. Like, I found it hard to walk out of a scene and someone's like, oh, you know, oh, love you, darling, they're being my dad. And I turn around and see an old man who I've never experienced.
Of course, you never got to see him.
And
yet.
That's made me feel sick and
sick
and weird and panicky and like, oh, and then, and that's in the middle of a sitcom I didn't even write, you know, and you have to be like, just gonna go and have a sit down, guy. But I can't imagine when you've written it and it's based on your dad and there's someone saying the things that you would have wanted him to say. Yeah, I mean, how did you get through that?
Like, well, I didn't really. I mean,
I'm not surprised.
I'm glad it didn't work out and it was well received, which was nice.
Yeah. Really well received. It did great.
Yeah, it was good. And actually, you know, I must say that the director did say in one scene where I turn up at the hospital and I think she's dead, she did say, well, this is a, can everybody shut up? This is a emotional scene for Frog. And I was like, okay, they do get it. But previous to that, I felt like nobody's getting with this.
Yeah.
So, and then when they would change things, it also felt exactly the same as my life is being changed beyond my control.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to somebody else about it sort of during the process. And they're like, well, yeah, but why, you know, don't they get on? I'm like, no. You have to understand that you can have all of these ups. At my dad's funeral, which was very quick, I sort of had to phone up. I was like, I'll do that. And then, okay, so my dad's died. To the funeral director, what do we do? And they took over. And it was in, you know, it was in like sort of 10 days later, which wasn't really long enough. And he'd fallen out with all of his surviving family. Ugh, don't know what happened there. I mean, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And then we had to have it at my mother's church. And that was all very odd. But I remember sort of going in, just going, oh, this is awful. And having to sing a hymn, and I couldn't. I just couldn't sing. I was just going to cry. It was awful. That thing's going, blah, 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 blah. And sort of thinking, but I'm angry, so I'm upset. And I couldn't stand them. But obviously you do. I mean, that's what unconditional love is, isn't it? It's not that you like them and you forgive them.
No, no.
It's just that irrespective of all of that shit, you just do.
Yeah.
Because that's the sort of biological programming. So I think that's the thing I did learn about what unconditional love probably meant.
Yeah.
It didn't mean, whatever you do, I'll always be there for you.
No.
It was more like, I might not be there for you at all. It's just that we are connected in this way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's weird. And then driving, the day after he died, actually, before the funeral, I was driving back and about 1,000 missed calls from my voiceover agent, who was like, oh, we've got this thing for you tomorrow. And obviously I hadn't called back. So eventually I stopped at the service station and went, yeah, my dad just died.
Yeah.
I mean, they did know it was happening. They're like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And I was like, well, do you know what? I'll go in and I'll do it. And that was the best thing, to go in. And I had to sort of, you know, do a sorted... I had to sort of say the lyrics to a popular song. I'm not sure I can tell you what it was. And in various accents, I had to sort of give my Jane Horrocks and I had to do all of this. And then that spaced out feeling of going, you want to say, hey, do you know, oh my God, my dad died, you know? Anybody else here in the club? Is there anybody I can tell? No, okay. No, I'll do it. Headphones on, woohoo. And you just have all of that insane energy.
Yeah, it's weird. It does... Yeah, it's just a very weird time, isn't it? And I think if you do like being in control, and also when you're self-employed, you're not in control. So there's another big bone of contention, like your life is already out of your hands the whole time. So control becomes a very valuable asset and something to hold on to. So I think when you are grieving, which is just so weird, and there's no control on anything, that's like, do you want to do a job that feels normal, that is a thing that you do, you're like, yes, please. Yes, I will do that, because I will feel human in a way that everything else doesn't.
Yeah.
And I completely understand, because I think if you don't get it, people go, oh, you didn't like him, why are you upset? And it's like, it's just not how
that's
it works.
Why I'm upset.
Yeah,
as well.
That's why I'm upset, because we didn't get on, because I didn't like him, or I wish we had, or in a way I did understand him. And you can cry and be furious at exactly the same time. And perhaps that's one of the things that happens after death, that you realise that. I think maybe emotions sometimes, if you haven't, you know, you think, oh, it's just sadness or anger. But grief is both of those things at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
And I would argue, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but you're going to find this out anyway, that having a child is you can hate them and love them at exactly the same time.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I can't believe you're still screaming even though I've done everything possible and nothing is pleasing you. Yet, of course I still absolutely love you and will do anything for you.
Well, one weird thing. So when you go to the scans, there was, you know, they're hard to get. They're both boys, and touch wood, they're not born yet, and touch wood, everything goes okay, right? But at the scan, there's one has got such a pretty face, like such a perfect pretty baby face. And we're like, oh, look at that. And then the other one was kicking like furiously. And I went, oh my God, that's my dad's face. He had the profile of my dad, which is likely, I suppose. And
God.
I was just like,
yeah.
But it's probably in my head. So that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that is weird when you get faced with that. And one of my nephews is quite similar to my dad as well.
Oh, really?
You know, he's half Japanese. So that's very odd to see like a Japanese version of my dad.
Yeah.
But you do, I think, I don't know, I found it quite healing, because again, there's a compassion of like, but they're just a child. They're not. So you start seeing maybe the personality or things that are triggering, as they say these days. You're like, oh, that's what my dad would have done. But you see it from a child's point of view and how they don't mean it, or how they're just trying to figure out what to do. And I found it quite sort of, healing in a way, to go, it doesn't mean you're going to behave the same way that he did.
No.
Because I'm here to love you.
Yes, and it was a whole different experience.
Yeah, and I think, as we said about not knowing what people went through, the more I've learned about my dad's childhood, the more I sort of thought, it was pretty weird, wasn't it? Like, there was pretty, like, well, I'm not surprised sometimes that you thought some behaviours were acceptable.
Like, I also didn't really know that my dad had had quite a major car accident when he was 18.
Wow.
Because he'd lost, I knew he didn't have any teeth, like false teeth at the bottom, because, you know, his jaw had broken.
Wow.
But then he'd had head injuries too, and I was like, maybe. I mean, but then it didn't make me sort of go, oh, that's okay then.
Yeah, yeah.
It always made me go, do better. But, you know, there are sort of things that you go... I suppose everybody, you just hope every generation gets slightly better at it.
Yeah, I think that's all you can hope.
And I must say, the other twin did have a cute face. It's just at that moment, it was just looking like it was like...
Yeah.
Scrunched up in rage. But yeah, the club thing, I have to remember it too. When other people go, somebody else's, you know, dad has died recently. And part of me is like, well, you know, now you know. Mm. Which probably sounded incredibly unsympathetic. Because, but then there's also a thing of going, well, somebody's lived a very long life. My dad was 68 and then 69 when he died, which isn't short. It's not cut down in your prime as such. But his failure to sort everything out and never paid the mortgage and not sorting anything like that sort of left a legacy of unfinished business that also made me feel I don't have very long. It made me think I need to do everything now. So I wrote that series and it got made and that's great.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was very nice was that I got lots of letters from people. Lots from people who are like, I'm dying, and I watched it with my family, and we liked it. And one guy going, my daughter and I never really got on. And it made me, you know, it was... But there were people, actually more in the business than viewers, who I'd, you know, go to a meeting with, and they'd be like, And you go, you didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
Because you're not in the club, and you don't have a complicated relationship with your parent.
Yeah.
So...
I think, you know, even if you did have the perfect relationship with your dad or mum, whatever, like it doesn't exist. There's always a complication, however small or ginormous it is. And I think once you're in the club and, you know, you're about to have kids, obviously if you don't have kids, that's absolutely fine. It just life events change your perspective. And as you get older, as I get older and nearer the age my dad was when he died,
I think that also makes you sort of think...
Oh, I can see why maybe he was frustrated with that. Or, you know, was at time when you were a kid, you're like, what's wrong with you? Your life's perfect. Like, you just grown up, you go to work, everything seems fine.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand them a lot of the time. They are, I say this, me and my brother say it a lot, like, they are just people. They're just people making shitty mistakes.
And was your dad, was quite young, wasn't he?
He was 44, yeah.
I mean, that's in the sights.
Yeah.
And he had children young then, huh?
I guess they were that generation, though. My mum always goes, I can't believe, by the time I was your age, my kids were at school. And you're like, different time.
Yeah, affordable housing.
Yeah, exactly. Less opportunity.
Free education. Calm it down.
So have you had any counselling?
No. When you leave the hospice, they give you the bag of stuff.
Yeah.
And they go, are you interested? And I was like, yeah. I always think I'm going to try. And I have tried in my life a couple of times to see a therapist. I am not very patient. You know, the thing of going, yes, no, I've been through that.
Yeah.
Like, can we just move it forward? And then I've tried, and I did sort of try doing an online one, you know, sort of things. But it just wasn't very good. And people are a bit like, hey, just think about it differently. And I practically need to sort of write in capital letters, I have tried thinking about it differently. And then one person did sort of say, I think you probably need some sort of PTSD thing. And I was like, I don't think I really figured it out that I was properly traumatised by my childhood, by his death, and then going through a sort of creative thing that was, you know, traumatic as these things are, but linked to a big trauma, like totally did my head in.
Yeah.
And so I haven't had any, I have tried really abortively a couple of times, but nothing.
I think it's really, I mean, like, as I always say, I didn't get it till very, very late. And I tried several times, and again, I, as my mother says, have, what does she always say to me? Suffer fools very badly.
Mm.
And I had a couple of ladies who, as soon as the head tilt and that voice began, and I honestly was like, fuck you, fuck you. And then one lady's eyeliner was so awful, I couldn't, it was like, you know, when you're like, it's like a butt, it was obviously... meant to be on her eye, but it was like above the eye, and one was longer than the other, like tried winged tips, but
oh god.
And so the whole time I was talking, I was like, what's happened here, girl? Like, what have you seen? It it's so bad that it's like, I feel like I can't get past your eyeliner.
Yeah.
And then I thought, maybe I'm not ready to talk if all
maybe
I can focus
she had
on
terrible eyeliner. She,
I mean, it was appalling, and some of her friends should have told her. But then I I do also think it's like relationships. I really did shop around. And then when I found the right person, I very much knew. And I kind of hounded this woman. She was very senior and she tried
to... Was she a therapist or just someone you liked the sound of? She seemed sympathetic and she's like, I'm a landscape gardener.
I don't know what you want, but your garden looks lovely. yeah, she was a psychologist, and she tried to, she was like, oh, I'm very busy, but you can come see this other person. And I went to see the other person. I had a row with him in within 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, a record even for me. I was like, wow.
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I'm
like, ah. And I remember rowing with him. And you know, if you know you're an argumentative person, you know what you're doing. And I knew he couldn't cope with what I was doing because he was like in the middle of a row. And I could see he was thinking, how did this happen? And I thought, if you can't catch me out
yes.
within a minute, because I came in here fully ready to row, yeah. I needed you to shut this down. And she, yeah, she's amazing. I've been very lucky. But I do think it has to be the right time. And I do think you have to find the right person. Like, some people, someone drives you mental as soon as you sit down next to them. They're not for you.
Well, I think also I realise that I have pursued for a long time a relationship, sorry, not really, like professionally, all sorts of things, with people who won't, I want them, they're wrong,
yeah.
and I then want them, you know, so executive producers and people like
yeah,
that, where you go,
yeah.
hmm, this, you're critical of me for no good reason, like my dad, why yeah. am I going after that? Men
yeah.
and women. And I'm just like, hmm, I, rather than just move on and let that go, I'm now going to pursue this. In the hope that one, you will fall to your knees and
yeah.
say, you were right, Frog, I have behaved badly. And they never, never do. And it's the same with sort of therapists.
Yeah.
You just go in a couple of times, I'm like, no, now I have to, you know, I have to pursue this to explain why you're a bad therapist rather
yeah.
than be therapized.
Yeah, yeah. But that's good that you're aware of it.
I'm aware of it now, but there's a lot of money wasted of me trying to get people to sort of, but yeah, you, I mean, I guess you just replay that relationship,
yeah.
don't you? And I always go, God, where is the therapist who would just go, see what you're doing there?
Yeah.
And it's all going to be different this time.
But yeah, I think that's the other thing, is there isn't.
No.
There isn't. Although I definitely, with my lady, as I call her.
So you got her in the end?
Yeah, I did. And it's made a huge difference.
Do you still see her now?
Yeah, I do. I still see
her. So how long has it sort of been?
Just over a year. So not very long. Or
okay.
Maybe a bit, yeah. Over, like a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
With gaps, because obviously I had a baby, so
yeah.
I had to have a bit of a gap. And she's very understanding about me being like, I've got a gig, I can't come in. But I have found it extraordinarily helpful. But I do think she's very good, because she's the first person who said things that, again, because I have a bit of a short temper and my brain is quick, she outquicks me.
Brilliant.
So she'll be like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying this. And I think, I didn't think of that. Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, that is a good point. Oh, yeah. And I feel like she doesn't get, because I think when your brain is quick and when you're trying to avoid things, it's all minutiae. It's like, no, because of this. And I'm upset because of these tiny things. This. And she's very good at being like, that's all bullshit.
Mm.
What about what's over here? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was ignoring that.
Yeah.
And I was getting plugged in over here and I thought we could talk about this for an hour. So I didn't have to go and talk about the fact that I'm sad and I feel vulnerable. And that's actually
yeah.
what the anger is hiding and the defence. You know, all of that stuff is always.
But again, that's the club, isn't it? You want to go, yes, I'm angry and frustrated about this. And yes, I'm absolutely like wild with rage because somebody's cut me up in the Sainsbury's car
yeah.
park, and I'm wild with rage that you haven't yet chosen the music track that I wanted for that scene, and I'm absolutely fucking furious that I have to explain things to you a zillion times or whatever it is. And you sort of go, but that's because
yeah.
I'm dealing with something.
Yeah, I'm really sad.
Yeah.
I'm sad. And that's trying to work, trying to let that out when you're very good at controlling it. That's
yeah.
what I found. It's like I'm, you know, I've got so good at like putting it very, very deep down.
And trying to control it. I mean, I think
yeah.
a lot of what the creativity side of it, putting in these, is because you're trying to, I think part of the thing I realised, I was trying to come up with a different ending.
Yeah, of course.
Which I can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's difficult. And then I think, you know, when you tell people, oh, well, this was a real thing, or people still don't get it until they're in the club.
Yeah, yeah. They don't, and what, I'm good, really good in a way. Like, I used to feel annoyed about it, and now I think, good, I don't want you to know. Like, enjoy your life in that field wherever you think the worst thing that happens is like you didn't get a job or something, like,
yeah.
or that you think you can imagine what it's like for someone to die. Like, great, stay there. So you're coming up to, so it was April he died.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're coming up to, what would it be now?
It will be the fourth.
So it'll be the fourth anniversary. Yeah.
And so the first anniversary was strange. I sort of, you know, in the first sort of year, I took it upon myself to sort of organise. We should all go and stay in some big house in the Lake District before he died, knowing it would never happen. And that sort of vaguely perked him up, actually. But it didn't happen, like all things.
that he would plan never happened. And then for what would have been his 70th birthday, I did book this. Well, it wasn't later shift, but because of my brother's children, we went to Centre Parks, which is great if you're a child.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it was okay, some sort of family gathering.
Yeah.
I do have safety in numbers slightly. The more people that are there.
Yeah.
I've always been a group person. I'm not really so keen on one-to-ones. And I'm just like, surround me with loads of people. And then I think it's also with the therapy thing. I'm like, this is too intense. I firstly got to show you that I'm quite funny and I can be clever and I get things and this is my love. And I've got all these sides for me. So once you know that, then we can talk.
Yeah.
And it felt too sort of intimate. But and then, yeah, the first anniversary... Second anniversary, I remember, and I think I was working on one of them, you know, so you're like, ah, God. But last year, I didn't remember it.
Yeah.
It at the happens, time. Yeah. And then I sort of was like, oh God, yeah. And it felt so far away.
Yeah.
But because actually that is more or less when Bucket was on.
Right.
So I was thinking about that, and I was sort of freaking out about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was imagining all the nasty things he would have said about it, whilst also probably liking all the rude jokes for sure.
Yeah,
that would have been his thing. So I did sort of think about him, but not on the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it'd be in a couple of weeks. And this year I have gone, oh yeah, that. Because I was thinking, oh, my babies will be born maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then it will replace that.
Yeah.
With, you know, big life events.
Yeah, I quite like trauma, having something nice in that month, I think, can be quite helpful.
Yeah.
So it's not just the month. It's like, oh, it's the month of this and that.
Yes.
So, I think that's good. So your babies will hopefully
be in
a month, and then it won't be just so looming with that anniversary. But I think it really, every year is different. There's no, as ever with grief, there's no right or wrong.
No.
Some years it's like the worst day ever, and in other years you're like, oh, it's today. I've completely forgotten and it's 8 o'clock at night. Like, oh, okay. So I think you just have to go with how you're feeling at that moment. That's all you can do.
Mm.
And just, try and be easy on yourself. And you have got a huge thing about to happen.
Yeah.
So your life is going to be turned upside down in a really, really nice way.
Completely changed.
Yeah. That's definitely, I have to say, someone tweeted me about this when I said I was pregnant on the show. They were like, oh, be warned, it's quite similar to grief. And I was like, what? How can having a baby be similar?
Yeah.
But what it reminds you of, I think, is your life being very out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good prep if you are someone who's had grief and then is about to have a baby. It's like, they're very similar tones in that you feel very isolated. Everything's insane. You're not really sleeping properly. You feel like people don't understand. But instead of this huge absence, there's this huge presence.
Yeah.
So it's very similar, but with a much nicer ending.
Yes.
Which is kind of what you wanted, right?
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I suppose you have that sort of dealing with medical professionals nonsense.
Yeah.
Where sort of people tell you all different things.
Oh, you're like, you're right back in, you're in the hospitals, you don't understand what's happening,
yeah.
You're put into rooms and you're right back in the, should we, what am I supposed to, what? You know, that feeling of not quite knowing all the time. But
then you have a life rather than a death.
Yeah.
To deal with. And two of them are going to make a lot of noise.
On that note, Frog, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you. I feel that was very cathartic.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, it was. Thank you.
You can follow Frog on Twitter at FrogstoneUK. Bucket isn't available to watch at the moment on iPlayer, but you can watch clips from the series on the BBC website. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, and you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.